You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, it's Tom Midweek Extra. It's John Gibbons hosting. I'm joined by Beth Lindop, by Andy Heaton and by Adam Melia to talk about Sheffield United, Liverpool 2. Look a little bit ahead to the weekend. And I want to reflect a little bit on, of course, the Premier League table and the Joel Matip news as well, because that got a little bit lost last night. But he is obviously well worthy of more focus, a world champion man and a world champion player, and yeah, very sad news indeed. But the positives, Adam, they won. I'm interested what you thought about the team so far, because it's a period where you need to rotate. It's a period where the manager will feel like he has to, certainly with there's a half 12 coming up that might have been mentioned after the game too, coming up on Saturday. So what do you think about what he did there and the players that he brought in?
I was a little bit surprised. I thought probably during the Fulham game, I was gagging for Curtis to come on during that game, and the fact that he didn't, I thought, well, surely, you know, it means he's starting, and you know, maybe a little bit less similar for Elliot. I thought both of them might have been a bit annoyed, sort of thing, when the team sheet drop, whenever it drops for them, at that. So in that sense, I guess I was a little bit surprised, but pleased, because I really didn't want to see a League Cup team. I couldn't get past the context of last night. It was, you know, the kind of enormity of it. City playing at the same time with a tough away game.
I think the Arsenal goal made it bigger.
Maybe, and I did watch the last 10 minutes of that, so it felt enormous. You know, it was couldn't sum it up in a word, just the sound. But yeah, and I suppose Gomez over Tsimikas was. Probably the biggest surprise. I did hear somebody giving that a shout as a possibility on a show. I can't remember who it was, but I was pleased that it looked like a proper team, a battling team. You know, Endo and Gomez, I guess, in there, it means there's kind of, you know, it sends the message. If the manager isn't already saying it in words, you know, the team selection he makes sends a particular message. And I thought it was a dig in sort of a team, which is what I wanted. I didn't, you know, you don't know basically what game you're going to turn up in. We're Liverpool, we're really good, we might win 5-0, but we might not. And until the game starts, you kind of don't know what sort of game it's going to be. And I was glad to see that there was absolutely no sign of taking it lightly.
Yeah, the midfield selections are probably the most interesting. I bet I agree with Adam. And do you think the fact that Endo plays and Jones and Elliot don't is that he thinks he needs to dig in, to use Adam words, or do you think it's maybe a bit of a reward because Endo has done so well? Obviously comes off to get his goal, so he wants to go, or you go again, or maybe a little bit of both?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both, really. I think it actually really suited Endo last night. And I was delighted after the game to see Jürgen come out and his interview after the game, give him a bit of a shout out as well, because I thought he was excellent. And one thing I really like about Endo is he's not afraid to put a tackle in, which I don't think many of our other midfielders are. Sometimes I would like them to be a bit more gung-ho, and I think Endo was last night. And you know, when he got that book in for a bit of a rash challenge in the first half, I did worry, and I did think at half time would Klopp take him off, but he trusted him and he repaid that faith. I thought he was probably our best player yesterday alongside Van Dijk. So yeah, I think Curtis Jones will maybe be a little bit frustrated not to have gotten the nod. I think it's obviously so frustrating for him because the momentum that he had at the end of last season, you know, coming into this season, it's been disrupted obviously by that suspension. And I think since he's come back from that, he's maybe not quite refound that level. And I think Curtis Jones is one of those players that needs a little bit of a run in the team to really find his rhythm. I think when he came on last night, you know, he didn't sort of grab the bull by the horns, but
I don't think he's been great in any of his sub appearances recently. Since he came back, I don't think there's been any one where you go, "Oh, we really sort of, you know, improved the team when he came on." And I guess that's part of the problem, really, because you can be knocking on the manager's door, and apparently he had a bit of a strop on the bench when he didn't get on. You know, when we brought on Endo, but then you sort of do need to grab those chances when they're there, or the manager's going to go, well, lucky, come on and score a goal.
Yeah, it's frustrating with Curtis because I really like him, and I think last season, that run toward the end of the season, and I remember it was in the away end for that Leicester game, and he was fantastic. And it really felt like he turned a corner. But my frustration with him has always been that sometimes he's on the ball and he's so talented, and sometimes he just passes back, and I just think, just turn and drive, and really sort of that sort of bit of impudence that he used to have when he first came into the team. And he was obviously, it was completely different then. He was a young player and the pressure wasn't on him as much as it is now, being a regular first team squad member. But I think, yeah, there were a couple of times last night I thought, you know, come on and show what you can do, and I don't think he did that. But I think, you know, obviously maybe I'm being a little bit unfair because he's only sort of just sort of come back to the fold really after that suspension. And I think if he got a few starts under his belt, he'd maybe be a little bit more, you know, what we saw at the end of last season. But yeah, I was delighted for Endo, and I've always sort of been of the opinion that, you know, if McAllister can play a bit further forward. I actually didn't think he had a great game last night, McAllister. I mean, he got kicked all over the pitch,
yeah,
didn't he, to be fair
help.
To him.
He was having young problems with his knee, wasn't he?
Yeah, but I've always sort of thought if you play him in his natural position and you play Endo in that sort of holding role, I think it just allows both players to thrive, whereas you're sort of trying to shoehorn McAllister into the six sometimes. I don't think it always works. But yeah, I was really pleased for Endo last night.
Did you happen to read the Endo interview in the Times?
Jonathan Norcroft. Excellent.
Really good.
Yeah,
it was
I liked it when he said Tomasi had a glass heart.
Yeah.
And just doubled down.
Yeah, yeah. He's very honest. Not brutally honest, but very honest. And he's happy to explain what he means.
By his honesty.
Yeah. If he gets an injury, he thinks, Tomasi thinks he thinks it's his car or something he's eaten or something like that. Yeah. But yeah, I thought the interview was great because it shows what a thinker he is about the game.
Yeah.
You know, he's got his own YouTube channel because he feels like Japanese TV doesn't go into analysis enough, so he's just doing it.
He's almost like mapped his way to where he is now.
Yeah.
And so he's like, it's not luck, it's because I've done all these things and I'm going to tell you how I do it, so maybe you can do it as well.
And I think that the source of his honesty is that, because he can be that honest with himself. He sort of knows his own failings and his own things that, you know, he said, I deserve to be here. He deserves to be in Liverpool because I've worked this hard and this is what I've done, kind of thing. It's not, you know, he seems to just be somebody that looks things straight in the eye. I really liked it. It was great.
But that'll help him, won't it, Andy? Because sometimes you've had players come to Liverpool maybe later in the career and, you know, who never maybe thought they'd be there, and they can get a bit overawed by it all, really. Whereas for him, it doesn't sound like he is, because, you know, he's saying, well, no, I've worked hard. And there's a story that, you know, that comes up again in the Norcroft interview where he was looking around in the summer going, well, quite a few teams need a defensive midfielder and I'm one, and they can't all buy Jude Bellingham or whoever sort of it is, kind of, you know, do you know what I mean? He's like, there's only so many of these young ones to go around, and he does back himself in this very kind of methodical way, and I think he believes he's turned himself into, you know, a top-class footballer that and he knows what he can contribute. And so I think, you know, although it's taken him a little bit of time, I think him continuing to back himself is important.
Yeah, there's a self-assurance there, isn't there? I think as well, because he's got that self-assurance, he's not trying to do things he's not comfortable doing when he's here. Because you come to Liverpool quite often, there's massive pressure on you, whether you're a seasoned pro or you're new, and you're like, I've got to really impress here. I've got to get in. I've got to make, you know, get in the team and show everyone what I can do, and maybe try things that you're not comfortable doing, and then, you know, that can have like a snowball effect, if you will. We've seen players wilt under at Anfield, especially new signings. And I think off the back of that as well, he's coming with not low expectations, but no one really knew what to expect from him.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of the time, if you sign for a club like Liverpool or City or whoever, there's normally like a million, funny enough, I mentioned YouTube, there's normally like a million YouTube compilations of your highlights, and you're like, oh, we're getting this player, we're getting that player. Whereas we're kind of finding out about him as he's playing. You know, if you would have asked me what my very little knowledge of him before he signed, defensive midfielder from Germany, 30, great, sounds solid, maybe a bit crabby, when he's been anything but.
Yeah.
That's what's really stood out for me. And again, last night, I think it was just before the book, or maybe just after, he took one on the turn and literally took two of their midfielders out. And that isn't something you think of when you think of a specialist defensive midfielder, which is what he's been described as. You're just not expecting that. And I think he's in the trust of his teammates fairly early as well. Because they'll give him the ball. You can see, but sometimes with players where if they don't necessarily trust the player, they won't give it to them in risky areas. Whereas he's taking the ball 10, 12 yards outside his own area, turning into traffic and laying it off. One thing on end, though, as well, the booking. I mean, Sheffield United didn't get a book until the 90th minute, which is mad. And I, you know, Endo gets his, and Canate gets his, which is a bit weird. And to my eye, we were getting kicked everywhere, but that's a different story.
No, it is, but he played on with it, obviously, and managed the game, and that shows his intelligence as well. Before the game, Adam Cuswellar said he wanted to make it like a cup tie, and felt like that was their sort of best option with the limited amount of time. It felt like he managed to do that. You know, the crowd felt a bit cup tie. Obviously helps that it's sort of a Wednesday night. You know, the team sort of played like that, the way they were trying to, you know, rush us a bit and hit us on the break and things like that. And it did turn into a bit more of a cup tie feel that maybe we would have liked. But was that just sort of inevitable? Is there anything we could have done about it, or was that inevitable with everything that had gone on in Sheffield? Specifically at Bramall Lane.
Now the game's over, I think we can say that, in my opinion, new manager bounce exists.
But it does help that you've won, because you can say, I think we can all say that wasn't a great time to play Sheffield United. No,
absolutely.
And you're not making excuses because we won.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm saying this now that we've won. But I much prefer being the last team to play a manager, and we beat them and then he gets sacked, which seems to happen to us a lot, to be fair.
With Manchester United specifically.
You know, whether it's that they really liked the new manager, they really hated the old manager, whatever, there was certainly something there which does not seem to have been present in their previous few performances. I mean, to be fair, I think that we expected it. I think that we weren't surprised by their approach, or by their physicality, or you know, the hostility of the crowd, the smallness of the ground, all of those sorts of things which are a factor there. I think it probably did seem like a cup tie. That, you know, on another night, they didn't have bags of chances, but there was a couple of shouts for, you know, for pulls in the box and things. I thought although we did get some bookings where Sheffield United didn't, I thought there was a few times where things kind of went in our favour, which was needed. But on
Canate push was a bit silly, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And
it's probably not a pen, but like I'd rather you just didn't do it.
Yeah, on another night, something bobbles in or something gets given, and it suddenly is very different. So, you know, keeping it even at the 90th minute or after what minute did we score the second?
It was late.
But they had a chance after that, and I being doom mongering watching the game, you know, with your inner chimp as they say, I was thinking, if they score now, this might end up 2-2. Like 1 minute left, because what I mean is, I'm not just describing me being a maniac. I mean, it it could have, if they'd scored almost at any point, it could have been a very different encounter, because they just needed something to kind of light the blue touch paper. All other things were there for it to be a really uncomfortable night. So it definitely shouldn't be underestimated how well we've done to keep that at nil, and in general how well we've fought, how well we've defended. I mean, Virgil scores the goal, but I just thought he was brilliant, and they all were, really, all of our defensive minded players and all of the midfielders in their defensive work. I thought they all really did a good backs to the wall job. Sort of small shout for Szoboszlai in that way, because I don't think he's had a brilliant game for the last few. Mm. And I still think he struggled a bit tonight. There was a few times actually where I was thinking about him when you were talking about Endo, Andy, that Endo didn't let us down at all in those times in midfield. He was taking it on the turn, as you might expect Szoboszlai to be doing. Szoboszlai, I thought, struggled a bit like he did in the first half against Wolves, but I thought he just fought. I thought he fought and fought and kind of won that. And by the end, he looked to have been playing himself into a bit of form. And certainly, kind of on the defensive side, I didn't think he let anybody down. And he gets his goal.
No, all good shouts. He did have that cup tie feel. And, you know, when Adam was talking there about how a goal can change the game, it reminded me a little bit of Luton. Mm. And the fact that in that game, Liverpool don't get their goal, you know, we have the chances, you know, we don't sort of put them in, and then you keep a team in it. I think getting that first one when we did was important, because it was probably the first period where we've been on top in the game, and then we get the goal. And that's always a sort of a good time to score, I think, to assert yourself. But I think as well from there, you know, I'm like Adam, I'm watching it sometimes, you know, behind it, your fingers, and listen, you never know with these things. Like I did watch the highlights back, and you know, to sort of help with this, and because I support Liverpool, and you know, you're like, did they actually really create anything, in where you're just sort of panicking yourself? But a goal, like if they'd have equalised, they might have gone on to win it, you know, if they'd have. I'm not convinced that he had enough time for Adam Elias to equalise it, but hey, you never know. I'll just watch stoppage back. But do you know what I mean? It's like, it sounds a bit obvious to say that goals change games, but I think, you know, in games like this, like Luton and Sheffield United, it's really true.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's one of those results that, with hindsight, you can look back on and say, actually, that was a really good win. And I think, you know, it wasn't a vintage Liverpool performance by any means, and I was watching a lot of it, you know, behind my hands, and every time they had a little bit of a break or anything like that, you know, you do panic naturally, don't you? But as you say, in terms of clear cut chances, in terms of saves that Keller had to make, he had that one in the first half, didn't he? And then aside from that, didn't really have a lot to do. So I think Liverpool did very, very well to limit Sheffield United to very few clear cut opportunities. And I think it's a testament to how much we've improved defensively as well. I mean, I didn't think Joe Gomez had a great first half, but sort of grew into the game a little bit. And Konate, again, looked a little bit erratic at times in the second half. But that being said, he won. Saw a stat this morning, he won.
I know, it's crazy, isn't it? It just shows that, like, you know, a combination of your eyes and stats is good, yeah. Because if you rely on stats to tell you the full information, you were like, Konate was brilliant, which we sort of know isn't true. Yeah. But if you rely purely on your eyes all the time, then there's certain things you might miss.
Yeah, and I sort of, like Adam, at the head of the game, I did feel very nervous, and I thought, especially after the Arsenal winner at Luton, I mean, I literally turned it on for the last 2 minutes, and yeah, the only word that came to mind when that went in started with an F and had four letters, so yeah. So it, you know, the whole new manager bounce under the lights, Chris Wilder, who had some sort of ancient beef with Klopp, didn't he? Klopp called him out a couple of years ago over something, and it just had all the hallmarks of a game that, you know, Liverpool would struggle in. And I think that they didn't. They managed to get two goals and keep a clean sheet is a real positive sign. And I think it's maybe the sort of game last season that Liverpool would have drawn, maybe, and would have looked a little bit shakier in. So, yeah, I think positives to take, even though it wasn't a massively enjoyable watch.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The holidays have arrived early with Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday sale. Upgrading window coverings can be a minor project with a major impact. Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. Browse premium blinds, shades, shutters. We have your patio covered too. And get unlimited window treatments installed for one low cost. Free shipping and Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday sale now. Save up to 45% plus premium doorbusters. Up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Yeah, I mean, that said, Andy, I'd still like them to be playing a little bit better. I tried to figure out last time I tried to figure out before the show when I was always planning the last time I think we played well and I got to October and sort of stopped, really. I was like, when we beat Forest 3-0 at home, were we good? You know, you said it's that the thing. There was a
Tottenham first half?
Maybe. I mean, it's a long time ago. It's a, so, I don't know. Would you have liked to see more from us, even with all the caveats of what we just said around, you know, the fact that it became a tougher game because of events elsewhere? Certainly from open play, I'd like us creating a little bit more at the moment. What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I thought we played all right against Brentford, to be honest. But, I mean, that's... Anyway, I don't know. I'm going to disagree with the Perry's here on this, I think. I think there's a couple of things here. I think if you watch that game back now... They didn't have a shot on target after the minute five.
Kelleher save, was that bad earlier?
Yeah, that one. I was made up for Kelleher, but that's a whole different story. I think we managed it. I think that Wilder, over the course of the season, if you say Sheffield United, night game, windy conditions, what do you expect the results to be? No one's really saying 4-5-0, are they? They're not. You're thinking, oh, all right, 2, maybe 3 if we get an early one. And then Wilder comes in, completely changes the system, goes deep. I mean, even said in his post-match that he was fuming first half because he thought he were too deep and they were trying to get them up the pitch. And, you know, I think if you play that game 10 times, Liverpool probably win it 8 times if both teams play in a similar fashion than what they did. I don't think it's particularly pretty, but I think the way it sets up inhibited our forwards a little bit. Thought Gakpo was all right. Thought Nunes looked dangerous when he came on. Does Nunes things, you know, misses the one-on-one when the keeper saves, should do better. Doesn't put Szoboszlai in when it was dead easy, and then put Szoboszlai in with a peach at the end, which is... So look at the other side of it as well. If you would have said to me, there's 2 games in the season where Liverpool score, 6 goals in 2 games, and the strikers get none of them. I don't see Liverpool doing that last season.
No.
I was made up that in that exact way that Virgil scored off a corner. I just think that is that sort of game. And I know I've said I was freaking out, but in my text messages I was saying this is a classic 1-0. You know, this is going to be a classic 1-0 win. It's going to be fine. But yeah, with that, you really want, you know, your centre half scoring a towering header off a corner. I know he side foots it, but you know that sort of night, and it was. I thought it was a classic 1-0 away win. It just ended up 2-0.
Yeah, and he nearly did score a towering header, put it over the bar.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't think it was as tight as what the live watch was with your inner team, because I was exactly the same as you. I'm saying all this saying to disagree with you. I was behind the couch watching it.
It was partly because of the City game at the same time. I think my terror was involved with two. It was two matches worth of stressing me out.
I'm not. You got a bit.
See what you want about Saturdays at 12:30. You're the only one playing.
I know.
I think as well.
I've come to like them.
You know, Spurs moan about injuries. This Liverpool side has had a lot of enforced changes. So you're going into these games that we've had. You've got. Goalkeeper's not there, Andy Robertson's not there, you're shifting players around that aren't in the natural position, you got a centre half playing left back, you know, and we've had other injuries going on. Obviously what's happened with Matip is there, and you know, that will, even with the best one in the world, that will have an impact. So I'm looking at it as a way, from another point of view, saying, all right, we're not playing stellar football, but we're managing it and we're getting results.
I think as well, like if you go back to the season that we won the league and, you know, we won 26 out of 27 games, didn't we? It took Gini Wijnaldum's spilled effort, didn't it, to win that game 1-0. So Sheffield United is always a difficult place. Well, unless you're Newcastle, you can go and win 7-8-0, however much
you different times.
But, you know, that's the sort of game that Liverpool always, as you say, 9 times out of 10, it's probably going to be a 1-0 game. It's always going to be narrow. And that was Liverpool at their absolute sort of peak, wasn't it? Still needing a little bit of luck from Dean Henderson, was it? It was either goalie at the time. So, I think that there are positives to take, even though it was a little bit of a nail-biter last night.
I think there's probably more positives for us to take, even if it had ended 1-0 in that fashion, than Arsenal's. You know, it's a last-minute amazing winner, and they will get some extreme level of confidence, their mentalities, you know, they'll be saying all those sorts of things, but they still conceded 3 there. And that pleases me, despite the fact that they've got a last, you know, another late winner. There's positives and negatives, I think, for them there. Whereas I think that I don't mind our grittiness, although, as you say, I would quite like to see us play well soon.
It just sort of all depends what happens next, I suppose. Doesn't it? You know, Beth's talking there about the year we won the league, and so you because you win the league, you're like, oh yeah, that was a great ground out win at Sheffield United. You know what I mean? But how we view this one just sort of not even depends if when we win the league, but sort of what happens next. Really, if they keep winning games, if we start, you know, the performances come, then you're like, oh, well, that period where, you know, we weren't at our best, we were grinding out results, really sort of made us. Whereas, you know, if we start dropping points now, you were like, oh, see, you can't keep doing that forever. Exactly. And expect to win.
Exactly. And I think, you know, to give an example, at the start of the season, we were conceding first every game, but still winning. And one of the things was going to carry on. We were either gonna stop winning or stop conceding first, and we've stopped conceding first. So it's all that sort of thing, isn't it? Where the context only comes through kind of hindsight. But we are now, you know, we're right in the eye of the storm, I suppose, aren't we? This was such a big week that we were looking forward to. With all our games, our 3 games, this one, you know, Fulham, this one and Palace and everyone else's games, you know, I've had that, you know, the City Villa game in my mind sort of for ages, looking at who was getting booked against when they were playing Tottenham the other day, you know, properly like down in the detail of it all. So, you know, Arsenal have got to go there as well. So there's a lot happening. But yeah, I think it would, if we can't necessarily turn on the style in every one of these games, you're just desperate for the points, aren't you?
Andy talked about Joe Gomez, but I thought he had a funny game, really. He started a little bit shaky. It's him who gives the ball away for the chance that Kelleher saves, and there's 2 or 3 moments where he looks uncomfortable defensively in the first 15 minutes. So then I think second half, I think he's really good defensively, but then there's a couple of times, there's one sort of right at the end where he's played in on the left, and it's the real, you know, cut back in, and then a poor cross, and then they nearly break from that. And I think that's still at 1-0 maybe, and it might have been the 2-0 one where Adam thought they were going to score, but it's a good example of what you lose from him there, and I wonder whether, you know, similar maybe to the Luton one, maybe just having that right footer there who's maybe not quite as comfortable is something that, you know, is adding to the lack of, you know, attacking cohesiveness as well as the sort of other force changes as well.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at when Liverpool were at their very best, you know, down that left-hand side, you had Andy Robertson and Sadio Mane, and they had that almost telepathic link at times. And so I think when you bring in, obviously Diaz is playing there now, but when you bring in, you know, a player who's not used to playing there, I mean, prior to this season, he'd obviously not played left-back for a number of years, Joe Gomez. And, you know, I think it's... he's fine at right back, but he's been asked to play at a position that I'm sure he's not particularly fond of playing. I'm sure he's glad to be in the team, but I think you do obviously lose a lot of that attacking impetus down the left-hand side. And I think Diaz is obviously, I mean, I'm loath to criticise Luis Diaz because of the absolute hell of a time that he's been through lately, and the fact that, you know, throughout all of that he remains available for selection and obviously scores that huge goal at Luton. But I don't think he's quite at his best either. No. So I think down that left-hand side, you've lost a little bit of that rhythm anyway. So then I think if you've got, you know, Gomez, who isn't naturally someone who can just come in and whip it into the box, then I think you do lose a little bit. And Gomez is a funny one, isn't he? Because he can have like an absolute world-class game, regardless of what position he's playing. You know, if he's playing at centre-back and you think, oh, this is Joe Gomez, and then he has another game and he makes a bit of a howler, and you sort of think, you know, you're sort of willing him to have that consistency, particularly now with Matip's injury. So, yeah, I think that probably did play a part. And I think for as much as Tsimikas has taken a little bit of criticism the past few weeks, you know, his last couple of performances actually have been good. And, you know, against City, he really impressed me. So I think he obviously does bring a little bit more of that natural sort of attacking impetus down the left.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll be back in at the weekend, Tsimikas.
It is the Anfield app pre-week, and if you're enjoying this, you should share it with your friends. I'm sure you've got many people you go the match with, watch the match with, wherever you are in the world, and the Anfield app is there every single day. So feel free to share this free show with anyone who may be listening. And also, then consider them subscribing, you subscribing, anyone who you've wanted to think should be subscribing to the Anfield app, get them into it as well. It is the Anfield app's free week. It is a big December. It's an Advent offering. See it as a pre-Christmas present, but the true present will be us all enjoying the Reds together. Sign up now.
But it is a win, and not everyone wins last night. Andy, it has to be said that the Man City one was a bit of a bonus, although we might have to be careful that Aston Villa seem to be the best team in Europe. I mean, the stats on that game are absolutely unbelievable. I saw them at half time and it was, you know, 13-2 in terms of shots, then it only goes one way. But 4 points behind City at this stage is really good news, you know, especially with the fact that we've already been there and things like that. And, you know, the Rodri thing is interesting, the fact that they do keep losing without him. Obviously, he comes back, you know, at the weekend for them. But I don't know, what are you making of the table? What are you making of last night? What are you making of the A's, Arsenal and Aston Villa, who are right up there with us?
I'm just made up we don't go to Villa until the second last game of the season. Come from the ring. I'm loving what Villa are doing. I'm loving what Villa are doing, and they are also loving it, I can tell you. They're just on a journey with no expectations. They're in this weird space where, you know, I think Emery's done a fantastic job, and he puts pressure on them to improve without talking up the chances of, you know, a league challenge or, you know, a Champions League spot. And he's doing that with a squad that's struggling. There's not been that much surgery to it. You've got John McGinn, who's in running to be player of the year. So I know we're only into December. But you're right, the absolutely best. It wasn't a sneaker 1-0 win, backs to the wall, you know, get lucky, City couldn't score the half full. City were abject. Mm. But Villa were brilliant. You know, we've seen City not perform to anywhere near the level and win 3 and 4 because teams are scared of them. Villa took them to the cleaners last night. Absolutely. I watched the last half hour, and then I watched it back again because I couldn't sleep because I'm a nerd. And, apart from the first 5 minutes, I don't think City even bothered Martinez at all. I think they got the game plan right. They executed it. I'd like to think that other teams look at how Villa done them and adopt that as a bit of a blueprint. Now, that's not to say City won't be back. They will be back because they're far too good for that. But it's nice to be ahead of them and not be chasing them, that relentless machine, because we all know what City are like once they get going. You know, if you say to me, City go into January 6 points off the top, I'd still expect them to go real close, because they will put a 14-15 game run together, back-to-back, with Arsenal and with Adam. I think Adam's spot on. The way the game ended against Luton will grab the headlights, but you are right, they did concede 3 goals. And they look vulnerable at set pieces. It was two corners in the Barclays goal, wasn't it? I think they're going to have issues with the situation with David Raya and Aaron Ramsdale for reasons I've gone over that I won't bore you with again. But they are grinding it up. I don't know. I think there's a pressure on Arsenal that isn't necessarily on Villa, that isn't as much on Liverpool because we fell away so much last year. So we'll see, but you know what? I'm more than happy to have more than two teams in a title race. I think that helps us.
Yeah.
I think it makes for better football, and that's exciting, isn't it?
I think that's the thing as well about having so many teams in a title race is, I think, you know, we know what City are capable of, and I think if City were to you know, pull out another 98-point season, I don't think Liverpool get to the title, because I don't think this Liverpool side, as good as they've been, I think they will drop points. They will have ups and downs over the course of the season. So I think you need as many teams as possible to have a go at City and make it, you know, a 90-point season or an 88-point season to win the title, because I think then Liverpool can be banging it. So I think it's really nice to see the likes of Villa and to have a few teams that you think actually they're going to cause City some problems. And of course, they'll cause Liverpool problems too. But I think as well, it's also quite weird that one of our probably easiest games of the season was Villa at Anfield, wasn't it? I mean,
our last football performance. Yeah, that's probably pushing it. We were great then.
But, you know, I know obviously it's different at Villa Park. They've won 14 on the spin there. But, I think, like Andy said, and he's spot on. Like, I think the more teams that can be in that title race, I think that actually works in Liverpool's favour more than it does in City's.
Yeah, taking points off each other. City can't get 100 points now, Adam.
That's good.
Someone else did the maths.
Excellent. Yeah. I don't think Villa are in a title race. And best just mentioned
neither did they, by the way, which is the fun thing.
They might do on the sly.
Well, they might do. I think that they haven't got the consistency. So their last game, I think they drew at Bournemouth, didn't they? So they aren't as good away, and I think they haven't got it in them to string long runs of consistent back to back wins together, home and away. Whereas I think Liverpool, City, and Arsenal have. So I think what they are is a really dangerous team, and that is also useful. You know, having a team that's extremely dangerous, especially at home, means that a team that can beat anybody is obviously a bonus, because we basically have needed for the past few years more teams than us and Tottenham that can seem to beat City and take points off them. So Chelsea, I think, are in that dangerous category as well. I wouldn't say they were obviously they've been rubbish, but they are probably, I'd say they were dangerous at the same time, as they've got a load of good players and they seem like they might get their act together at some point. So you never quite know. They're never going to be consistent enough to put a title race together, but they're in that dangerous category. Arsenal, I think it's daft to say they can't win the league. So I think that I said that last year, and I don't think it was daft. They were top last year by, I don't know what they were top by at this point, but I thought last year City will win the league by 10 points because I didn't see that they. I thought that they had good consistency. I thought they had great momentum from a sort of quite easy start, and I didn't see much in terms of a squad that made me think they're going to be able to stand up to what, you know, City will do, unless you're 15 points ahead of them at Christmas and they kind of give up. So that is what happened, and I think that I thought they did the best business out of anybody probably in the summer. But I still kind of think so I think they are in the title race, and they will challenge, and they potentially with a fair wind could win the league. So I don't want to say they can't, but I think that they still have some of those same issues. So I think they have had a bit of an easier run than other teams.
I've just checked it again. I saw this morning that I've just checked. They've only played one team in the top nine away from home, and that was Newcastle, and they got beat.
Yeah.
So the rest of them, they haven't played yet away. And then they played Chelsea, who were 10th, and drew. So they haven't beaten anyone in the top 10 away, and have only played two of them. So, and then you look at them, they've played everyone in the bottom half of the table.
So it's similar to last season, and I think the other thing that's similar to last season is that I for some reason I've done this a few times, looked at their starting lineup this season and thought, wow, that's brilliant. I really think they've got a great first 11, but I don't think they've necessarily, well, I don't think anybody's got the bench options that we've got, but I don't think they've got a very deep squad, and I can see certain players, I don't know why, but Rice, maybe because he's tall, I can see him being tired in March. I think a similar thing to last season, I think they may run out of legs a bit, and you know, so this game that they've got against Villa on Saturday or Sunday is massive and really instructive, and I think obviously the game at Anfield is going to be really instructive. City, on the other hand, as I said, I've been quite obsessively looking at that fixture they had last night, especially knowing that Rodri was on four leading into the Tottenham game and what he's like when they don't play. So basically, I manifested that last night, that defeat, because I could just see it on the horizon, and I was thinking, you know, if we are, let's not mince words kind of thing, if we are to win the league, we need City to wobble. Because if City are purring and firing on all cylinders, we won't. Arsenal won't. No one will. You need to, you know, everybody would need, you kind of need a 15-point head start in order to be anywhere near City when they are firing. So the fact that they are looking a bit wobbly, the next thing that kind of needs to happen is for a couple of other things to go wrong mentally with them. So we'll sort of see. Because as it stands, the most likely thing that probably happens is Kev comes back after Christmas and they're brilliant.
We went Welsh. we could go to Goodison Park on the 27th of December, me and you, if you want.
To support Everton.
Yeah.
Can I go?
Yeah. Well, we could all go.
Okay.
Yeah. If you think that'll help. It's all hands to the pump.
You're taking your placards.
Well, it depends who Everton are supporting that day.
Adam just makes the point there about City and wobbling. They haven't won in four.
Yeah.
They haven't won in four. Three draws and then a loss.
Yeah.
Now, have the heads gone, Andy? I didn't watch them last night.
Well, I don't think the heads are gone, but they almost look like they knew they were beaten, which is very, very unlike City. There was no like last minute surge. I mean, it was only 1-0. It could have been 3, could have been 4, but it wasn't. So like you're going into the last 5.
In the same way as Arsenal conceding 3, them not scoring is a big thing, really.
Yeah.
Because they get beat, but they get beat 4-3 or something.
That's what I'm saying. It was like a 1-0 away. You're like, someone said 1-0 away to City, you're assuming the Haaland's at the bar, they've had one disallowed, there's all kinds of chaos going on. It was actually quite serene.
Yeah.
The last 5 minutes, which is weird.
Well, they barely cracked on. They nearly scored the second.
Yeah.
They hit the post and stuff like that. So they were more likely to score than the City were.
Ederson made the cracking save late on as well. Really, really good 1v1 save when it comes across his goal. Really good. So you don't know that they go to Luton. Funny enough, you're talking about Arsenal. City's next game's Luton away, which you'd expect City to probably win 4 or 5, but you just don't know. But if they don't get a result at Luton, then does it go tabloid speak to a mini crisis to a full blown crisis? I don't know.
We'll have to change the colours of the light bulbs. Go to a red alert. Okay. Just very quickly, I do want to talk about Joel Matip, but ahead of Saturday at Crystal Palace, I mean, Hodgie's doing the business for us in every possible way, Adam.
They're booing him, aren't they?
Yeah, and he's saying, I don't know why, they've never had it any better and stuff like that.
He's amazing.
Yeah, he's doing...
such a statesman, isn't he?
I follow a bit of Palace Twitter and they're not happy, both with what they're watching and then what he's trying to tell them they're watching.
Yeah, I mean, we could roll back the years and talk about some Hodge files. He's done a couple of good Hodge file entries this season. It might have to be brought back to life. His comments about Eze were weird the other day as well. When he says, I'm not saying there is something going on between such and such and such and such, that always means that he is saying that. I can translate Hodgie. So it seems like there's rumblings behind the scenes. I'm not sure whether I'd love it to be another one of them where we might be the last game a manager faces is against us, but we'll see.
There was one earlier in the season as well, not to obsess with Hodgson, but it's so easy, where these young lads come on and young lads did well. He's like, well, look, you can't really praise, you can't really judge them on 20 minutes at the end of a dead game. And then the next week they came on and struggled and he slaughtered them.
Yeah, I know.
It was amazing.
Oh, yeah.
So it turns out you can judge them just negatively.
Yeah, he very much likes throwing a young player under the bus. I think it's always a funny one to preview Palace away, isn't it? Because we've got a really good record there, but it always feels really tough. They are not in a good place. We have got a good record there, but yet it's another one where you'd think I'm desperate for us to get the first goal. Really, I think the 12:30 thing probably does help us. I don't mind 12:30 aways. If it's going to be, if the alternative is a 5 o'clock and a really loud crowd, then I'm fine with the breakfast kickoff. But and the Hodgson factor, just I don't know, it continues to amuse forever. So we'll just have to see. To be honest, I haven't thought about this match that much because I was that preoccupied with the Wednesday one that I haven't particularly sort of thought about kind of that in terms of previewing it. But I think you can probably see that some of the players that kind of didn't feature from the start, you might say, are we going to go again, or are some of those players going to come back in? So you know, in terms of the front three, does he do Gakpo again, or throw Darwin in from the start? And I sort of think Diaz and Salah got a bit of stick on the commentary last night, but I thought they both worked really hard. They obviously didn't get any joy, but they do a job. And I think that Klopp said that after the Fulham game, that even if the strikers aren't scoring, you can kind of see they're enabling the midfields and the defence to get among the goals. So I think it may be more of the same, but I would quite like to be kind of, you know, knocked out or something until it's over, because I'm sure I'll be terrified come 12:30 on Saturday again.
We've got our Christmas party on Friday night as well, so I can just see myself hungover, slightly anxious, worried what I've said.
You could just keep drinking the whole way through.
Well, it's a dangerous game. I drink till the 27th when we go to Goodison Park to cheer them on. It's a dangerous game. But yeah, Adam's right though. It almost kind of, Palace away always feels trickier than actually what it is. We've got a better record there, and you think they've only won once there at home all season, but you think they've got this really good home record. And so I don't know, they should be fine if they play all right.
Yeah, you would like to think so. I think, you know, in the context of the week that Liverpool have had, I think, you know, considering the manner that they came back against Fulham late on Sunday, they obviously sort of deal with what could have been a bit of a banana skin last night, and then they go to 12:30 kickoff. Obviously, Klopp wasn't too happy, was he, last night when that got referenced in the post-match interview? But
we can go top though. We play first and we can go top.
That's nice, yeah.
That's the impetus, isn't it?
The best thing about a 12:30 kickoff, isn't it? If you do win, you can enjoy the rest of your weekend then, and if you lose, then you can't. You're just fuming for the entire weekend. But but yeah, so I think it's one of those games that sort of feels like it's always going to be a bit tricky. I think apart from that 7-0 we had there when obviously it was behind closed doors, I can't think of too many sort of real fantastic performances we've had there the last couple of years.
Game before it all went wrong as well, wasn't it? We won 7-0 and went top and then didn't win until May or something.
So, I'm not expecting it to be sort of a vintage, you know, 5-0 win, but I think Liverpool will win. I hope I don't regret that come Saturday. But I think just in terms of Arsenal as well, obviously going to Villa on Sunday, I think they've used their allocation of last minute winners for the season now, haven't they? Surely they got a late one against United, didn't they? They got
City as well. Late.
So yeah, I think they must have used all of them up now.
Finished. absolutely done. Okay, just before we finish, I did want to talk about Joel Matip, because it was confirmed after the game last night, Andy, that he's ruptured his ACL. With his history of injuries, with his contract situation, it wouldn't surprise you if it's the last time he plays for Liverpool. Unfortunately, it's a shit way to go out, but it's a shit way to go out on a brilliant Liverpool career where, you know, he won every trophy there was to win, and hopefully he'll be around, hobbling around to lift a UEFA Cup in Dublin as well to complete the set. He's been a brilliant signing. He's so popular within the squad. He's popular in the fan base, and yeah, he'll be forever remembered, not least for that little layoff in Madrid to De Bocarigi.
And it's another excuse. It's another excuse for the squad to go and win the league, put a real stint in for the league and the Europa League, send them out on a high. Listen, he's in the argument. He's in the argument, or at least the conversation, as Liverpool's best ever free signing. You know, he's been here a while now, and he didn't convince everyone initially when he came in, I think it's fair to say, but I think the seasons when Liverpool have been good, he's been imperious. And I think the great shame of all this, and look, the biggest shame is that it's happened, and it's shit, and the contract situation, as you said. But he was in the form of his. He was in the best form.
Playing brilliant, yeah.
That he's been in for years, and he looked confident, and you know, just when Liverpool looked like when Liverpool looked solid, as well. I'm not saying we haven't got adequate replacements there. We hopefully have, but him and Virgil looked kind of like the him and Virgil from 2018-19. But even away from that, as you said, the popular member of the squad, he's almost like one of the granddads of the squad as well now, if you think about it like that. And, you know, barring some miracle, and you never know, it with that being the last time that we see him, it's a shame. And it's all the bigger one for me is how the injury occurred, which I think is doubly shit. Like, it wasn't even on the field of play where he got the injury. It, you know, he goes and slips on the turf by the dugout. Mm. And it's just crap, isn't it? It's just crap. I'm really upset about it.
Yeah, it is crap, but to try and be, you know, positive about it is to remember his career, yeah, and what he's done, Adam, and you know, we talked before about, you know, signing players you don't really know too much about and what the impact is sort of going to make when he comes in as a free transfer. I don't think any of us could have expected, you know, the length of his Liverpool career, the things he's won, the moments that he's given us. He scored a few goals as well, and, you know, to throw all that in, like, an incredible Liverpool career.
Yeah, I mean, as Andy was saying, he was in the form of his life, and I feel like the tragedy of it all is that I feel like he's finally been recognised unanimously as, you know, how good he is. I think Virgil's probably, I think it was Virgil that said it, that Matip, he said it a couple of years ago, Matip can do things on the ball that I can't do. And I think that sort of comment, there's been a few of them, but it sort of gets laughed off slightly, and I don't quite know why that was. It's, you know, he's king of memes for a start. You know, he's like a comedy legend. So he's in a way sort of a little bit of a joke figure. Mm. He's quiet. You know, he's not a loud voice, and he's not a loud voice in terms of being on any sort of media, and sort of unassuming and a bit odd. So, you know, those things combined with his unorthodox style means that I think it did take quite a long time, literally maybe until this season, for everybody to realise literally how good he is, how brilliant he is on the ball. And it isn't just, you know, the thing he does, his Joel Matip Maisie run. It's not, you know, it's not kind of just a sort of comedy Benny Hill thing. It's a brilliant thing that not many people can do, and amazingly important for the team. So much so that you can see, I think you can see Konate having a go at it. You can see Virgil having a go at it now. You know, so the biggest tribute you can probably pay him is, as Andy was saying, you know, I'm gutted and I'm concerned. You know, he's not kind of an old player getting sort of trotted out for testimonials. He was playing a vital role in this really good season we're having so far, and I think it is a good tribute to pay him to say, I'm worried about whether we will be able to fill that spot of all the things that he did and he brought. So yeah, it's a real shame. But yeah, I mean as soon as he went down the other day, it's funny actually, I just had a look at Ben's ratings because I was sat next to him, and he said we'll never see him again. That was the first thing Ben said, and you know, I think Klopp thinks probably for the same, because after the match he said it's not good. Yeah. You know, and now he's said it's the ACL, and I thought that and you know, Klopp's obviously thought it straight away. Yeah. There was something about the way it happened that made you think, that might be the end of this season, and therefore possibly the end. Do you think they might give him a new contract? I don't
think they would have anyway, to be honest with you.
They wouldn't have anyway, but what about now?
What, just to sort of try and help get him back and stuff like that? They've done that before. It was a Lallana. They sort of,
somebody,
basically to sort themselves out. I don't know. I mean, we might be being a bit premature with all this, but because, you know, they might decide to give him another year, and he might sort of have an unlikely comeback. But I just do think it is worth reflecting, you know, either way, of what a brilliant player he's been, and as Adam rightly points out, what a brilliant player he's been, you know, so far this season. And, you know, it's not just sad, you know, from a point of view for him, he is a miss for this team as well, the way he's playing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I actually would, if he did continued in that vein of form for the rest of the season, I would have liked to have seen him given a year extension. I think he came out a few months ago, didn't he, and he sort of said he'd like to stay at Liverpool, and so I sort of thought he's maybe the sort of player who wouldn't mind being sort of the fourth choice next season, you know, or the fifth choice, or someone who could come on and do a job, and maybe in cup competitions as well. So I was really keen to see him get an extension based on what we've seen from him this season, and he's been tremendous, and you know, in the best form he's been in since that 18-19 season. And I think, you know, actually, when you look back on that season, I think Virgil is the one who gets a lot of the plaudits, and rightly so, because he was absolutely imperious at that time. But I also think the second half of that season, Liverpool would not have gone on and pushed City all the way in the league and won the Champions League if it wasn't for Joel Matip, because I think there were times when he matched Virgil's level, maybe even sometimes surpassed Virgil's level. But I think because he obviously wasn't the glamorous signing, he'd been at the club a couple of years, he came in on a free transfer, and the nature of who he is as a character, you know, he is a little bit quirky, he's not on social media, you know, he did sort of go under the radar a little bit, and I've always been a big fan of him. I've always thought that when he's fit, he's probably Liverpool's best defender to go alongside Virgil, and we were finally seeing that this season. And you sort of associate him with picking up little niggles, don't you? And so for it to be an injury like this that will, you know, more than likely curtail his Liverpool career is really sad. But I think on the flip side of it, you've got to be brutal. And I think, you know, we're talking about potentially being in a title race. And, you know, I think regardless of whether they'd have given Matip an extension next summer, I think Liverpool next summer would have looked to target a central defender. I think they've got to do that in January now, because I think, you know, providing the next couple of weeks goes well, we're going to be banging the mix. And I think what we don't want to do is get to the end of the season and think, oh, if we'd have just brought in a defender in January to maybe cover if we get an injury, because Konate, as brilliant as he is, I don't think you can rely on him to stay fit for months at a time. So I'd like to hope that Liverpool now are thinking, right, we might make a move for someone in January, because we've got a real chance of winning this league.
Just, John, just on that there quick, I've only just realised right now, if that was Van Dijk gone off and had a month on his a year left on his contract, I don't think the dialogue around should Liverpool offer Van Dijk an extension would be as dismissive. Mm. I've only just realised Van Dijk's older than Matip. I never realised that. Yeah. Funny how it's framed, isn't it? I mean, I don't think they will offer him a new contract, but obviously depending on rehab, because it's probably the worst injury to get as you're getting older into your career. But who knows? Hope springs eternal.
Who knows, indeed. But for now, it is right, Joel. Thanks for everything that you've done for Liverpool on the pitch. Like we've all said, maybe there's one more chapter left. Who knows? It'd be an unlikely story, but you've thrown plenty of them in. Thanks a lot to Beth, to Andy, to Adam for joining me. Hope you've enjoyed that. Loads more coming out over the next day or so, obviously, to preview this Crystal Palace game. Don't forget, everything is out for free this week, so make sure you're sharing it with your friends as well. Cheers and up the Reds. Sports Social Podcast Network.